T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. He's Ozzie Guillen. Good morning, Ozzie. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Very well. Back in town. What's going on?
Well, I mean, we're looking forward to a really interesting year. Let's start with the pace of play and the idea that no more mound visits, or at least a limited number. We got to keep the game moving. Are you on board with that? Do you like that, or do you wonder what they're up to?
Well, yes. It's a lot of confused, though, because if the shortstop or the second base or the third base come out and the bunt situation to let the pitcher know what play they got on, I don't know that going to count. That is a visit. But come from the catcher, yes. I think that's a great idea. The space of the games, we better make the catcher work, concentrate a little bit more. Obviously, the problem is when you have a young catcher with a young pitching staff, there's going to be a lot of confusion with the sign, especially with the reliever. But I think that's a great idea. One of the ideas I can buy to it, because I think visit to the mound sometime, they even know you have middle second base, what sign we got on. And then really you have to cut that thing down. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, speaking of young catchers, and I guess Wilson Contreras is 26, but he's young to the position, certainly. He converted to that position, and he's handled it, whatever they put on his plate. He's proven that he can handle anything they give him. But the swagger he has and the confidence he has, some people see that is could be a danger at some point. When you see Wilson Contreras, do you see him as a possible MVP candidate, or do you see him as a guy who, you know, a guy who also said, by the way, I'm going to go out to the mound as many times as I want, whether there's any consequence or not? But can he have a breakout season where, you know, he's someone that everyone's talking about?
Wow, you know, breakout season for the people, you know, I think he had the talent. There's no doubt about it. He had the talent. I think this kid is, some people love the way he play, love what he does in the play. Some people hate it, you know, the way he play, calling a hot dog and stuff, but that's the way he handled himself on the field. We just talked about that a couple of days ago when we do a Spanish game. I think, wow, you know, we have him in an interview, and we asked him about it, about visit to the game. He said, you know, he had to do what the league wants to do, and he had to be on board. Obviously, it's going to be hard for him because he used to go out and talk to the pitchers a lot. But, he did. He said he can't do it anymore. But I think this kid really, you know, what kind of year he's going to have, it's all about health. Hopefully, stay healthy. But he got all the tools to do it.
So he's taken a step back from that. He said he was going
to... Someone told him about the injections. It's not a fine that you could... the pitcher could get run, he could get run.
Well, you know what's funny? Because in Spanish, we make fun of him big time. You know, say, why were you going to make the game quicker? Because it's kind of painful when we do the cups. We stay like another half an hour of the game because you every 2 seconds you got to talk to the pitcher. Then he start laughing and he say, well, you know, I got to get used to. I got to go by the rules. I have to respect the rules. And that's what he say in Spanish.
Huh, that's interesting. What you know, a lot of people think he could be their breakout player. You know, he not that he isn't already an established player, but he tweeted out, or I think he talked about trying to catch up to Yadi Molina and these guys, and that didn't go over well. But I think he's a hell of a player and could really be pretty good.
Well, I think people misunderstood what he wanted to say, or some people understand the way they want to understand. He don't want to really say anything bad about Jaddy or Posey. I wish I'd be like them. I would be better like them. What's wrong with that? You know, he's a player. I'm not going to say, well, I hope I'm not better than anybody. I think what he say, he pushed him to the limit. Like, I don't think he say anything really bad. When Jaddy respond back, I don't think it was necessary because you know, I mean, he really don't say anything to hurt anybody's feeling. But when you have a player think like that, I remember Carlos Zambrano's every opening day, we got to win. This is a year for the Cubs. We got to win. I got to win the Cy Young. And people hate that. I said, well, why you want him to say? Like, we got to lose 100 games? And I think that's a good positive way to start a season.
When you won the World Series, Ozzie, you went through three closers because of circumstance and injury, and you end up with Bobby Jenks. And still, I love when you went out there and signaled to the bullpen by giving you the wide arms, you know, bring in Big Bobby. But Theo said that Brandon Morrow is going to be their closer. Now, Wade Davis was all near perfect doing it last year. They traded for Chapman. The ideal is that Morrow takes the ball and never gives it up. But do you believe that's going to be the case? And if not, how is that going to impact the club if they have to get to a second or third choice?
Well, you know, it depends what they have. I think they're going to go by who throw the ball better. I think they count with this kid a lot. I think people don't believe in closer anymore, but I think that's very necessary. That's a very important three out to give. But I think the way the Cubs playing, the division they're playing, I think it's going to be a tough division. The closer is going to be a big part. Last year, Milwaukee did a pretty good job because their closer threw the ball better than it was in the past. But they will figure it out. I think tomorrow he should do the job, and hopefully they know how to move him out and get somebody up.
Who do you like this year? Who do you think is going to win the World Series?
Wow, win the World Series? I say Cleveland.
Really?
I think I like Cleveland pitching staff because, you know, they talk about the Dodgers. But I think Cleveland, coming from the American League, they have a young team. Hopefully they can make up a move. They got a little bit of money just in case they're going to move somebody. But I like Cleveland. But it's kind of hard. You know, I mean, so many good teams right now. You know, the New York Yankees with the lineup. You see the lineup they have. You know, the last three pitchers in the bullpen. But I worry about their starting pitcher. They're going to have the team. They're going to score 30 runs one day, and maybe a couple of days they're not going to score because the way the lineup is. But if you look at the lineup, Yankees lineup is just scary. You know, Washington, I don't know, something's going on with them. I don't want to say Atlanta Braves type, but you know what I mean? They get to the playoff, and after that they don't do anything. And hopefully with Dave Martinez, they jump to the next level. But I think, you know, I mean, hopefully Cleveland is a team I will like. Hopefully they stay healthy. Maybe the first time in so many years Houston can repeat because they got a new pitching staff. Verlander going to start with them. Cole's going to be with them. And I think they got the swagger. I think they have the talent. But I think coming for the season like that, like with last year, it take a lot from the players. Boston Red Sox, you know what I mean, great ball club, pretty good ball club. One of the ball club, but the competition will be tough. They're going to be in the playoff. But I don't know. For some reason, I like Cleveland. I'm not that smart, but for some reason, I like him.
Yeah, Michael Kopech has been, you know, talking as if he should be up here with the club. He was told, it's not your time yet. Some of that has to do with the financial aspect. Probably the same with Eloy Jimenez. But when do you expect to see those two guys up here, and what would you expect once they get to the White Sox?
When the month's up, you know, when they cannot go on. They do the same thing, the same stuff Atlanta Braves doing with Acuna. Similar situation. To me, White Sox, they have to be patient and they have to stay with the plan. I just saw an article about when Kenny said, you know, the hardest thing for me is we on the pennant race or the song we got to make trade we can. I like that. They're not going to destroy what they're building right now, what they're doing. I think they have a good young talent. It's up to the players. So it's up to the players. Hopefully the players break down. But as soon as those guys ready to go to the big league, they're going to be up and put the team together they want to put together for the future.
You know, it's fun to look at the Cubs because they went out and got Yu Darvish, and they added a Chatwood. They replaced the guys that left, and arguably their pitching staff is as good as it's been. What do you see their fate as this year?
I love it. I love the pitching staff. I don't know what Darvish – it's depending what kind of Darvish we're going to have.
Right.
You know what I mean? This kid is going to be inconsistent about, you know, how long he's healthy. He told the ball well, it can be one base on the league. I still wonder what they're going to do, you know, with happening and those guys play second base shortstop, if they're going to leave, they keep playing shortstop every day. How many bats going to have, where going to play left field. But I think Joe will figure out. Joe is the type of guy, when you play a lot of day games, Joe will know how to make the lineup. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about how many different lineups going to make. Well, we're going to make the lineup the best one for that day. I worry about that situation. Is the guy got to play every day or not? And, you know what I mean, they have a player here that not too many people mentioned to it, and Mr. Rizzo. Rizzo is being great on the league. Unfortunately, play with Ryan and take all the news out of him. But I think Rizzo is your most underrated player in the game, because nobody talk about hang on the song in the end of the season. You look at the numbers and you go, wow, I don't know this. And I think the Cubs, now the heat is off to me. Last year, the heat was on. We had to repeat. We had a great team. I think now they realize they can go back and play the game, and hopefully they stay healthy, and hopefully they want to get what they want to get.
How would you handle Jason Hayward? You know, here's hoping that he finds a stroke and puts the numbers start going the right way, and he starts helping out offensively. But as a manager, at some point, you know, and we're almost a lot. I think a lot of Cub fans are think we're almost at that breaking point where $184 million doesn't get you the player you thought you're getting. Great defensively, but as a manager, you know, do you take the temperature of the clubhouse? When do players start thinking, okay, this guy's not pulling his weight? How do you handle that situation?
Well, you talk to him. You talk to him and say, listen, bro, you are a part of the team. You're not the team. And that will take the weight of the pressure. You come here to help us, not to win it for us. Honestly, when you sign that kind of contract, you're going to play in Chicago, you want to do more what you're supposed to do. I think now went off. I think now it's more relaxed, maybe, because he went through it last year, very, very tough situation. I think this situation for him this year should be easier. I think the Cubs are going to see the player he was in the past. You know, had no pressure. He had to go there and play the game and help the ball club to win games.
Ozzy, we'll let you go just on the way out. Do you like Moncada leading off?
Well, you know what I mean, when you're going to put Judge leading off, anybody can lead it off now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You'll see Rizzo lead it off. The game we used to watch in the past, like the Ricky Henderson, the Coleman, the Willie Wilson, all those guys, the speed, lead off. Now they're going to put the guy to get on base the most. The one going to get the most at bats, take that with him. Moncada struck out a little bit, a lot. They got good speed, but also you're going to see better pitch. So hopefully that works out for the White Sox.
Great stuff, Ozzy. Great to catch up with you. Great to get started on another season, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care. That is Ozzy
Guillen. Have a great summer.
You too.
All right, pal. That is Ozzy Guillen. We're going to have a lot of fun talking to him throughout the course of the baseball season, and we're going to pick his brain on all things baseball and certainly get his perspective on everything. We've got David Haw coming up in just a little bit. We'll be talking Loyola Ramblers basketball with him, and we'll get into a little bit of the Final Four stuff too. We want to talk about all four teams that are left in the tournament and what it means and how we read what has happened thus far in this tournament. And is it one of historic proportion in terms of the number of upsets, and of course the 16-1, and what does that say about the future of college basketball? Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is Porter Mosier. He is the head coach of the Loyola Ramblers, and he's going to the Final Four. He's taking a team to the Final Four for the first time in his career, and the Ramblers have won a championship. It was 55 years ago, but they did win one, and every team in the Final Four has won a championship as a result of that occurrence. So you got Bill Self and Jay Wright, who have won titles. You've got Beilein, who has lost the title. You got three guys that have been to a championship game, and you have Porter as the outsider here, and of course the Ramblers as the outsider and the 11 seed, a team that nobody picked other than me into their Final Four. I did. I mean, I picked them to win the national championship just because they got in the tournament for the first time in 33 years, and a guy I know told me I had to pick him to win the title, and thank you, Brian, for doing that.
I would have been disappointed if you didn't.
And you had him go into the Elite Eight at one point before
your
you
brother
talked yourself
backed
out of
him.
It.
Your brother became...
My brother's on board,
he
man.
He put his first communion money right down on Loyola.
Yeah,
it might be $15, but you know what? It's going to turn into a nice little payday.
It is. It's 10 pounds total, and it's $15. And if they were to win the title, he would walk away with $37,000. He also has... He said he made a bet before the thing began. He made three bets. He made his Loyola bet. He bet on Michigan after the Big Ten tournament, and he bet on Texas Tech.
Wow, he's
so
covered.
He's covered with this game.
Yeah,
you know, so he's going to get something out of it, and then he's got to cover himself. He's got to figure out. It's not much money with Michigan. it's significantly larger stakes with the Ramblers, and how can you get a team at 5,000 to 1? It's just insane.
Yeah.
On a futures bet. When you know they're in the tournament.
It was only up for the one. First guy to the window got the bet, and then they took it down.
Yeah, so it dropped significantly.
You know what? Hearing Porter, and he's talked about each week with us, mm-hmm. and talking about how he trusts the players to be mature and handle it the right way, and they come from winning programs, and they're used to being on the biggest stage, whatever level they've been on. But to hear him talk about how he wants them to enjoy, yet again, this next step, the Final Four weekend, when every coach that he's called tells you, how crazy you think you know crazy. Well, the Atlanta is nothing compared to what it's going to be in San Antonio and even the days leading up to getting down there. But to hear guys like Clayton Custer and Dontre Ingram talk yesterday about talk about, you know, they're just keeping doing what they've been doing. I mean, you know, Clayton Custer said yesterday that basically, you know, we're not playing over our head. You know, we have won 22 of the last 23 games. Each game we go out there and play the same way. So this whole idea that people start asking about basically how you got here, they know how they got here. And I really do believe, just hearing again yesterday from the players, that they haven't been, it hasn't hit them if it's going to hit them yet, that people are expecting them to be that Cinderella story that doesn't get it done. I mean, they really truly believe they've done it the right way on the basketball court to get here, and they believe they're going to continue to do so. I mean, I think everything Porter has, all the faith he's shown in this, in the players, is well founded, because they seem to get it. They seem to understand it. And they seem to understand who they are.
It's interesting, as we mentioned, Porter's the one. You know, this is his first Final Four, and hopefully more to follow wherever he ends up, because he's a really good guy and a really good coach, and he deserves to have some success as a result of the hard work he's put in. But he said that he has called coaches that he knows, guys that he knows, and I love this question that he's asked. What would you do over again if you could? What? Like, basically, it's not asking, like, how did you go through it? What was your routine? It was, what was your mistake?
Yeah.
When you look back on it, what element of it would you have changed? What was the lesson that you learned? Because you do learn from everything that you go through. And I love when I hear him talk to the team and they just play a little bit of practice and he says, get better. What are we going to get better on today? It's all about getting better. This team has improved over the course of the season. They're a different team now than they were. They're a significantly better team now. And I also saw the New York Times wrote the story of the two boys growing up in Kansas and playing from the third grade, Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson. Like, when that story is written in the New York Times, that's now become part of – it's like a totally different kind of level of conversation.
Well,
different audience. Yeah. Now everybody needs to know what we've known for a very long time. And when those two guys are talking, they're like, they want to play as many games as humanly possible. So they're going to come up If they don't win, they'd come up one game short of the most they could play together this season. If they do win, then they'll be in all the games that they could possibly be. They will have extended their season as far as it could go for the two guys that played together since the third grade.
And you know, some coaches do, you know, what mistakes? Some coaches start getting out of character themselves, right? They get nervous. And there are coaches that have told everyone, okay, give me your cell phone. You get down on site. When you get to the Final Four city, you're on lockdown, right? Whatever media thing you have to do, you go out and do. But then otherwise, back to your room. You're not heading out. You're not hanging with family and friends. They're not contacting you. They're not texting you. You're not calling. And, you know, players feed off that. All of a sudden, the coach is nervous. All of a sudden, the coach is, you know, trying to micromanage things. And they take their cue from the coach. So I think Porter's approached it the right way. And let everyone enjoy the moment. But, again, that comes back to that trust, that he trusts the players to handle it the right way and he doesn't have to do anything different.
Really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the game, and I'm really looking forward to see what we get out of this team and how it works out for them. And essentially, if they can continue to kind of cling to their identity and be who they are as the stage gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is going to be like nothing else.
Well, Jay Wright even talked about it. He said, you know, the few years between Final Fours for him, I mean, it just how much it's grown. And, you know, the atmosphere, the party atmosphere, the media expectation certainly said within a few years it went from like five, from on a scale of 1 to 10, went from 3 to a 10.
And it would be a shame if you let that be what caused you to not win a game, you know? I think they know that, and I think that they will bring their best effort. And whatever happens, it's Joe, you said earlier, they're playing with house money. It's been, you know, they've won. I mean, they've done something incredible, but there is no finish line, so let's hope they keep winning. I'd love to see them in the last game of the year.
I kind of wish they could get the game out of the way maybe tonight or tomorrow.
Yeah.
With all this hype, we still have 3 more days.
I know.
And then you have to go down to the Dome. And Porter Moser was talking about that yesterday. That's always a big story. Some teams have difficulty shooting with the depth perception down there.
It's you know, some NBA teams struggle with that. You know, sometimes it's hard. You know, you know, we're going to have to get the tape measure out and go through the whole Hickory routine of, you know, hold down this tape. Let's measure this here. Get
see,
a chair.
It's the same,
let's,
guys.
The rim.
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, it's Hoosiers. You got to use that. That's the big. that's how you do it. Hoosiers. Measure it up.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. We are going to bring in David Haw, the lead sports columnist of the Chicago Tribune, next, and we'll talk to him about the everyman story and if he believes that Porter Moser is leaving Loyola. We'll find out if this is if there's real finality to this game on Saturday, or if the storyline continues. Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw is the lead sports columnist of the Chicago Tribune, and he is down in Miami getting ready for that doubleheader, the Cubs game. And
right over to the Bulls.
Or maybe not. Good morning, David. How are you, buddy?
Did you even consider that? Yeah, no.
How are you? Did I consider that, Brian? No.
Smart. I knew you were a smart man. I just wanted to confirm.
Yeah. You know, I think I could probably fit that in this week, but I did not cross my mind.
And you are you going to the Final Four, I imagine, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. Friday morning flying from Florida to San Antonio. Mully will be there by late morning. Looking forward to that. Going to miss Thursday's access. I know the Ramblers are leaving at 8 o'clock Chicago time in a few minutes. They're leaving campus. Opening day is tomorrow. So it's a big week in Chicago. Cubs begin a season that could end with the championship itself, and so we'll be there Friday, and we'll be there in time.
You know, I believe on Sunday when the Tribune staff made their predictions for the baseball season, you had Anthony Rizzo, if memory serves, as your MVP candidate, right?
I did,
yes. And we just got off the phone with Ozzy a few minutes ago, and he said, again, one of the most underrated players in baseball because of the position he plays and because of the other personalities and players on the Cubs team. And even the MLB poll that they had the other day, Wilson Contreras got votes for MVP out of 50 experts and not one for Rizzo.
That's interesting that he didn't get any votes in that. And I think Ozzie's a smart guy because you look at it, just it seems like it's his time. And you look at all the production and everything that has happened off the field, he gets so much attention for doing, and as he should, and he's earned it. For being community-minded and responsible and being a real, true role model. But that sometimes he's such a good ambassador for the Cubs and such a community-minded person, you do overlook or tend to forget how valuable he is at the plate, in the field, in the clubhouse. And I think that you can make the argument that he's been as valuable as anybody to this Cubs team since in the last 3 years. And this year, you just feel like he's about ready to put it together. So, you know, you could pick a couple guys on the Cubs, but I think Rizzo is ready to take off and continue the consistency that he's provided. And you know, kind of this is his year.
They've put such a team together that we don't sit here and wonder, like, what would it take for them to win? We wonder what could go wrong. I mean, it just seems like they've got, you know, you heard a comment the other day, maybe the best pitching staff they've had, which is a huge statement to make. And up and down the lineup, you know, I guess there was an issue about maybe who's the leadoff guy, but Ian Happ seems ready to answer that question. So what can go wrong?
It reminds me of the Blackhawks a couple of years ago when we did have the citywide debate over, you know, who is their sixth defenseman and who's the back, you know, who's the fourth liner and who's going to be the extra forward. I think this is sort of, you know, the golden age of the Cubs baseball, and you're looking at things like spring training was pretty issue free. The Ian Happ situation early on, he answered that. He went out and won that job as a leadoff hitter. How do you make any other decision? And I know Joe Maddon was sort of being coy yesterday about his opening day lineup and what it's going to be. Who cares? I mean, you know it's going to be somebody that they're going to be in an order that makes sense. It's going to be a potent, and everybody's going to get their at-bats. There's going to be injuries along the way. You know, can the pitching stay healthy? Can, you know, some of the players return to form? There's not a whole lot of suspense surrounding this Cubs season, but there is a lot of excitement because you know what you're going to watch is going to be a team that's probably going to be, you know, at the top of the division for most of the year and preparing for the playoffs. And that's the consistency that the sort of Cubs fans have been spoiled with lately. And it all starts tomorrow in Miami.
You've been all over this Loyola story, bringing us great backstories. Tom Hitchell column, not only did we love it, Porter Moser told us how much he appreciated the people behind the scenes getting their stories told. When you're around this team the last day or two, do you detect any hint that they're going to be a different group individually as players or as a team in approaching the task at hand? Because Porter's talked about the faith he has in this group, and to this point, they haven't failed him.
I really thought, Brian, that if they were going to meet that moment that was too big for them, it would have been last weekend. I really thought that they might, and probably part of me almost, you know, you become sort of conditioned to expect some sort of things. I kind of expected them to be, you know, unable to kind of rise to the occasion in the Elite Eight. I thought maybe they would be a little rattled. Maybe their composure would be, you know, compromised. But, boy, nothing about this team should surprise anybody anymore. Porter Moser, just communicating with him, you know, this is, he's having the time of his life. The players are savoring every single second, and they should. And I don't think that's going to change. I really don't think that they'll get to San Antonio and their eyes are going to widen and everything is going to feel like just magnified because, you know, it is the Final Four and it's going to be even more a bigger stage and more people and more cameras and more media and all the stuff that they'll always remember. I don't think it's going to change the way they play Saturday, but it has been fun to tell. You know, the Hitch story was a great story. You know, Mullin goes back with him. Everybody who went to Loyola seems to know Hitch, and I've heard from them in the last couple of days. it's been really fun to do that. I just talked to Dick Vitale for a column that's going to be posted this morning, and he's, you know, he met the Pope 7 years ago. This is him. He met Pope Benedict 7 years ago, and he said, "I'm telling you that, David, because my new bucket list includes meeting Sister Jean." and he wants to jump on the bandwagon, and it's just neat to see Loyola kind of thrust into the center of a national story and everybody embrace him where they have.
And you know, it's not going to be easy. Obviously, Michigan's a very good defensive team and can shoot lights out. And, you know, it's not supposed to be easy. You're not supposed to get to the Final Four and run into another, you know, 9 seed or 7 seed or whatever. But, you know, we were talking about it. When you break down the games they've had to play to get there, they beat a 6 seed. They beat a 3 seed. And now they play another 3 seed. So, I'm not sure if our conclusion is that the bracket fell perfectly for Loyola, or if maybe they were underseeded.
Well, I think they probably were underseeded, Molly. I think that this kind of speaks to the entire argument that people have made about the respect for some of these mid-majors. And I know Porter hates that word, but the Missouri Valley Conference, you can't tell me that the way Loyola has played, that they were an 11 seed going in. You know, they've won 32 games. Teams that win this consistently aren't really 11 seeds. So I don't think that they're going to be as overmatched as maybe some people say. Michigan is probably the difference in my mind, and just kind of simplifying, I think in from Miami and Tennessee and maybe even Kansas State to a lesser extent, but I think Kansas State was just limited offensively. But I think Michigan is going to be better coached than some of those teams offensively. They're going to be more disciplined and more structured, and you know, John Beilein is such a good coach,
right,
that you don't think they're going to beat themselves. It's going to be more difficult for Loyola. The margin of error is going to be even smaller.
Right.
But I don't think it's impossible. I really don't. And it would not shock me at all. Now, I know we're talking again on Friday, but it wouldn't shock me at all if Loyola is alive and we got a Loyola-Villanova final, which would be such a great moment.
Yeah, I loved one of the points you made in the column today about not only having patience with Porter building a program, but as an administration at that time, knowing what you were and what you're capable of being, and making that move from the Horizon to the Missouri Valley, and having faith that you're going to fit in there. And, you know, a lot of schools don't seem to know who they are right now and where they're at in the food chain, and, you know, that you have to go back to crawling before you're going to walk again.
Takes a leap of faith, and I think, you know, when I pointed out this morning that the two decisions that led to this point were hiring Porter in 2011, having the patience with him, you were going to struggle, and you did, and then letting him do it his way, but also joining the Missouri Valley Conference. You wanted to become what you are. You had a vision. You had a plan. Grace Calhoun was the athletic director, and you executed that plan. You know, you don't want to pick on DePaul, but they're sitting there watching this all happen, and I don't think that we know they have not become what they wanted to be by joining the Big East. That has not been a good move for whatever reason. There are a lot of them, but there are lots of reasons why that's not been a good fit. They've had 3 coaches that have not been able to figure it out. I don't understand the accountability factor that's at DePaul when you have all this happening. So Loyola getting to the Final Four has to increase the urgency of places like this, and they have to look at what did they do right to get to this point. Well, as you pointed out, they recognize what they wanted to do, how they had to do it, and who they were as an institution. And it takes some vision to do that. And I think that you're seeing the results of some of the risks resulting in these rewards.
You know, Grace hired Porter, and they did move into the Valley. I believe she also hired Cheryl Swoops.
Oops.
Everybody,
as they say, gets a mulligan.
Okay, look at you. Do you think Porter's coming back? I mean, obviously the Pittsburgh job's been filled now, right? And the Louisville job's been filled, and it's been filled by Chris Mack. That is Xavier, you know, Jesuit school in the Midwest. Porter went to one of those and is coaching at one of those. I think if I'm not mistaken, they had Thad Mata there, and he left, and they promoted Sean Miller, and then he left, and they promoted Chris Mack. So maybe they have a guy they want to promote. Maybe that's their solution. But is that a job that you would take if you were in those shoes?
Well, they do have an assistant, I believe, as a possibility, as we talked about the other day. Porter could be tempted by that. It's a good fit. They're going to be able to pay him probably more than Loyola could. A couple of things real quick. Number one, I think coaching in Chicago, living in Chicago, being in Chicago matters to him. I don't think being a big deal in Cincinnati means as much to him as being a big deal in Chicago. let him enjoy what it's like to be the coach of Loyola when it actually means something to be the coach of Loyola. The other thing is what we just talked about. Loyola was very patient and loyal to Porter Moser when he struggled. And you look at his record and the progression that he made. They had to stick by him, and they did. Now it's time maybe to return the favor a little bit, provided that they are fair with him with a salary that is commensurate with the success he's had. Now that's a mouthful, because there's a big range of what fair is. But I think if they, you know, the going marketplace, he's $1 million a year coach to me. Now I think that's easy to say when it's not your money. But if they make a fair offer to Porter, I don't think he's motivated to leave. I think he wants to continue to sustain the success. And places like Xavier and other places that may come, you know, probably tempt him, but maybe aren't as good of a fit for a guy like that.
Great stuff, David. Thank you. I will see you there Saturday.
Looking forward to it, Mully.
All right,
safe trip, and Brian, we'll talk to you Friday.
Thanks, David.
That is David Hall from the Chicago Tribune. I don't know what happened there. Somebody hit the wrong button. Oh, it was me.
My fault. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you for jumping on my sword.
He's got your back.
I was trying to hit the other button. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Hey, Jim Hickey's going to join us next. We're going to talk to the Cubs pitching coach. We'll ask him all the crucial questions and get all the interesting information as we will. We'll be talking to him every week during the season. So this will be our debut of our opportunity to talk to Jim Hickey. I'm looking forward to it. Southside guy. Obviously, a guy knows a little something about pitching. Be very interesting to get his philosophy. We'll do that next. Molly and Haley on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.